The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube, we're live on Twitch, X/Twitter, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. It's all good. We love it regardless. And in fact, some of the people that we love so very much are the people who support us on Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Once a month, we pay a little bit of tribute to the folks that support us at the $5 and up level. So we're going to read off their names now, kicking it off with Oidas Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam Bass.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Carrie Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jeremilo.
Christina Rensfield.
Oh, yep. Chris Terlizzi. I know how this order goes. I get it.
Clemens Luau.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sotowaite.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Enrique Chumbaz.
Gerard DeVillier.
Ian Rady.
Ian Thomas.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wright.
Julian Labato.
Kelby.
Kevin Clydrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kaminsky.
Liwana Thomas.
Luke Asink.
Maddie.
So nice, it's Matt Dice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC Chef Brett Macris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
I'm in trouble. Someone called the provocative ambulance.
Oh, you know who's going to call it? Rev Mikey.
Robert Patton, nope.
Roxanne Tyler, my mom. I finally got to say her name.
Is that the first time? That's the first time you said her name. Wow, weird. Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Hurry up, it's Tamila Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
Take a chance on the 12 Banj.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
Zika's Viral Comics.
So close there, right at the end. Oh, man. Lost it at the 10-yard line. Is that the expression? I don't know what it is. I shouldn't try to do sports stuff. But what I should try to do is tell you about our Patreon. We did give a shout out there, obviously, to a lot of folks. There's a lot more folks that support us there. And if you'd like to support us, $2 and above, that's it. That's all we're asking a month. You get access to our very active, very fun Patreon Slack that's going pretty much all day long. And then you also get our back catalog of podcasts from 2011 all the way through 2023. That is thousands of podcasts, many of which are otherwise not online anymore. And there's other bonuses and prizes and things up from there. But we really appreciate the support. For real, it's actually very expensive to do the show. So we appreciate every dollar we get. It really helps keep it going. So thank you, everybody. Including the people whose name we didn't mention, but we have some
great... We have a very expensive speech coach on staff that really works us through all those names.
And it's if you can believe it, it's usually worse. It's worse before this somehow.
Yeah.
God.
It doesn't seem possible.
Well, listen, we have some amazing guests for you this evening. A little later on, we're going to have some of the team from Lester of the Lesser Gods. But right now, why don't we bring in a longtime supporter and friend of the show. He's the creator of Steamroller Man. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Schofield. Matt, welcome. Hey. Hello. Hey.
Hi, guys. So happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you here. Like I said, you've been a long and friendly supporter of the show. I'm very excited about this book that you're doing.
Oh,
a little bit of background. You have worked on a ton of animation stuff. More specifically, you've worked on The Simpsons for a long time as a director and storyboard artist, I believe. And you've been working on this book, Steamroller Man, since 2018. And finally, it's coming out.
Finally ready to go.
Listen, I will say, without spoiling much, it's a great book. We had a chance to read it. But also, you put it up today, I believe, on Kickstarter.
Yeah, right? Launched this morning.
And it is, I got to do the big reveal here. It is successful.
Yeah.
As of 40 minutes. Yeah. You funded it in 40 minutes. You're asking for $750. You're all the way up to $2,254.
Wow.
If you want to support it, you can check it out. Steamroller Man over on Kickstarter. This is great. That has to, before we even get into the book, that has to feel good to take this long to get here and be like, there we go, done.
Yeah, it feels amazing. Like, part of the reason it took so long was because I think I spent like 3 years like prevaricating and procrastinating and thinking like, I don't think I can do this, but finally kind of just bit the bullet and was like, I just got to do it and start making moves. And finally launched it. And so, to have it be, to not only meet the goal, but surpass the goal by so much on the first day, I'm in a state of shock, quite frankly. Like, I was not expecting this at all. So, it's awesome. Great. It's awesome.
Well deserved.
Let's talk about the book for a second. So this is very like Tick-esque. It strikes me. You've got this guy with this enormous steamroller head. He's fighting, without spoiling too much, a gigantic gingerbread man cookie guy. It's very ridiculous, very silly. It starts with a musical number, which I thought was amazing. What was the genesis of this idea? Was it you saw a steamroller and you're like, there's my superhero, or where did it start?
No, the genesis was when my kids were younger. You know, obviously, I started doing the comic around 2017. We were, we're a family of geeks. My wife's into comics, and so we've kind of brought up our kids reading comics since they were little. We were having a dinner table conversation about what are cool superhero names. And my youngest son said, what about Steamroller Man? And
this that's awesome.
Light bulb went off above my head. And I immediately got a picture in my mind of a guy with a giant steamroller for a head. And so I sketched it on a napkin and I was like, oh yeah, that's awesome. He'd look like this, right? And I showed him the sketch and my son was like, no, I meant it's with steamrollers for hands. And I said, okay, well, that's going to be your version.
You're fired, kid. Man. You're out of off the team.
yeah, exactly. I think we're going to go another direction. I said,
got the job and lost the job within a matter of seconds.
It's crazy. We have your son on here who's promoting Steamroller Hands. I feel weird that we booked you guys on the same.
No.
He also funded today.
So that was the genesis. And as I started to think of the character and what would the implications be of a superhero who had a giant head, it just suggested more jokes. And I've always liked comedic superheroes. The Tick was a huge influence. I read that when it first came out when I was a kid. And it just kind of blew my mind that, like, you could do superheroes, but also comedy in the same book. And then also like the Giffen, Dematisse, Kevin Maguire, Justice League. I was a huge fan of that back in the day. So yeah, I've always liked comedic superheroes. And this was just kind of like the perfect vehicle at the perfect time. Cause I wanted to do my own comic for years and years. And it just so happened that I had that conversation with my kids at around the same time where I was like, I'm just going to do it, comic. I just got to stop procrastinating and just do it. So yeah, that's the genesis of Steamroller Man.
It feels like it's about time. I feel comedy comics are always a little bit to the side, I feel like, but as the industry has gotten so much darker and focused on that, it feels like we're finally coming out of that and there's more room for comedy. As comedy feels like it's getting squeezed out of so many other areas of culture, it's great to see it popping up in comics, a place it belongs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Mark Russell's stuff.
Yeah.
Like his book, My Bad, that was one of the best, funniest things I've read in the last year or two. I as I said, like I've always liked comedic comics. And so I do feel like, yeah, there's a place for it. And not everything has to be so serious. And it was definitely like doing this comic was a definite reaction on my part to the seriousness that seemed to be pervading mainstream comics for so many years. So yeah.
Could you talk about the design of Steamroller Man a little bit? Because again, I don't know if this is too much spoilers, but he's got very much like a Clark Kent Superman thing going on where most of the first part of the book, he's wearing these enormous glasses, which are very hilarious and adorable. Then he takes them off, has the tiny eyes, gets a little like pent up, a little bit of that Ren and Stimpy pinch going on in the look and everything. So what went into the development of these two different aspects of the character?
Well, that was the first gag that I thought of was how could a person who has a head that looks so distinctive have a secret identity? And then I thought, oh, it would be funny if he just had a pair of glasses that he put on, like Clark Kent. And then when I started to draw it, I did, you know, glasses that would be the size of his regular eyes. But I was like, well, how do the earpieces reach the sides of his head? So that's when I had to make the glasses big. And then that in itself suggested like, oh, because the glasses are so big, they magnify his eyes to like anime size eyes. And that became a look in itself that I realized, oh, that actually works really well. So yeah, that's where that part of the design came from. And then
the secret identity works in this case. Clark Kent, I don't buy it. Steamroller Man.
Oh. Oh, good. I'm glad you were fooled.
Yeah. I had to read it three times.
Yeah, spoiler. I mean, geez.
You were like, I can't work out. Like, what? How is the connection? So
the guy with the glasses was just one page before, and now there's this entirely different character.
Right.
It's like, what are these two stories we're following here? Make it one.
Accomplished.
Yeah.
Nice.
And again, I'm just asking about spoilery stuff, but I really did enjoy this book. What led to opening with a musical number that goes on for an appropriate but very long period of time?
Sorry, sorry it went on for so long.
No, it's great.
The genesis of the musical number was, again, because I was, like, I originally published this on the web, and I published it one page at a time. And I was really doing it sort of improvisationally. I knew where I wanted the story to go and where I wanted it to end. And I knew the sort of general story beats, but the way to get there, I really just improvised. And so I was kind of at the point where I was at that's part in the story. Hamilton was playing in New York, but it hadn't started the traveling company yet. And so I was obsessed with Hamilton. I had bought the soundtrack, but I had never seen it because it was only in New York and I'm in LA. And so I was just listening to the soundtrack over and over again and just was, you know, obsessed with the wordplay and the rhythm of those things. And so, yeah, I just thought, how can I, you know, introduce, you know, because I have the four-page sort of preamble of the villain Sugar Daddy explaining his plan. And then I was kind of thinking, well, how could I introduce Steve Rollerman, which is Steamroller Man's secret identity.
Now I get it.
And it makes a lot of sense. I blew it.
Now I see.
Well done, sir. A tip of the cap.
And so I just kind of thought, like, oh, it'd be funny to just like do a musical number like in you know, Disney musicals, they, Ashman and Menken always talked about like the I Want song. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, that's a good way to introduce a character. But because I was improvising it, I just sort of came up with as many sort of funny rhyming couplets as I could. And it was, you know, the song was supposed to be about like how he thinks life in Kurtzberg City is great, but he's oblivious to the fact that he's kind of ruining life around, for everyone around him just through his sort of hubris and obliviousness. And so I just kind of came up with visual gags that went with rhyming couplets, and it just kind of went on and on. And then that's why the song goes for like 12 pages. And it was somewhere in there that I started to, because I was doing it online, page at a time, people were asking me like, are you ever going to print this? And I was like, yeah, I'd like to. But then when I started to really think about printing it, I was like, oh, well, I've got to know how many pages this story is going to be if I'm going to print it to get a quote of like, well, how much would it cost? And so that's when I was like, I better wrap this musical number up and get to the story.
Those dollar signs started.
Yeah, so that's like, why the
right,
first.
Let's go.
Yeah, the first issue was originally going to be 22 pages, but it ended up being 40 pages just because I found trying to do comedy in comics, you know, you sort of need the space on the page to pace the gag. A lot of it's done, you know, the punchline is often on a page turn, which is a great, you know, the page turn reveal is a great setup punchline device. But that requires two pages to tell a joke. So that's why the page count expanded and expanded as I was going, because the jokes that I originally had in mind was like, oh, I need two pages for this joke. So, yeah.
That's really interesting, because it feels like with an action story, it's like, well, I can cut this, I can move this around. Comedically, it literally doesn't function unless you have it.
Yeah, correct. You can't do it in fewer pages. You have to pace it the way it's going to have to be paced. So, yeah.
Did that drive you a little crazy, because you kind of had like, okay, you know, you said you're doing some improv, but, you know, thinking 22 and then ending up with 80, you know, I mean, it just, you know.
Classic improv.
I mean,
it went on too long.
No, I mean, it didn't. At first, no, I wasn't like frustrated or anything. Oh, okay. I was just like, huh, okay. I guess this is going to be 40 pages and all right, I'll just keep going. So yeah, it was fine.
Given that you did have and do have a lot of experience working in animation, working on The Simpsons, but what skills did you kind of have to break when you were going from TV comedy to comic book comedy?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, I worked on The Simpsons for over 20 years now. I think this is my 24th year on the show. And there was a long time where I wasn't drawing anything for myself outside of work. So everything I was drawing was just Simpsons work, which, you know, and as you know, the Simpsons has a very specific distinctive style, and even like random background characters are all drawn to a forehead high formula, whereas, you know, normal humans are 7.5 heads high, and for a heroic comic book figure you do 8 or 8.5 heads high. So I did find that when I first started drawing Steamroller Man, I was drawing all the characters kind of squat, and the proportions were closer to Simpsons proportions. And I actually had to go back when I really got serious about printing it. I actually went back and redrew, I think, like the first 5 or 6 pages of the comic to correct that sort of stuff and just make it look as good as I could possibly make it look.
Follow up, not about the book, but just a Simpsons question. I'm curious to hear from you, because you have been there for such a long span of time. I think from a very outside perspective, obviously people loved Simpsons at the outset, and then I think there was a good chunk of time in the middle where people were like, yeah, I don't like the show, I'm off the show. It feels like people have really come around to it again and be like, wait a second, actually maybe the show was always funny. What has that journey been like for you from the inside of the show?
It's been it's been interesting to watch people's reactions. I mean, I kind of share the ups and downs, you know, but I think that's more from the point of view of like when you're working on any job for that length of time, it eventually becomes a job, right? Mm-hmm. So you lose the, you know, I started off very inspired when I first joined the show and was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm working on The Simpsons. I'd do this for free. I'd sleep under my desk and, you know, I want to do this 24 hours a day. But after a while, and, you know, I've got a wife and a family and you know, all that sort of stuff now. So you start to get a little more like cynical about the material. But yeah, I totally agree with you that in the last few years, the quality of the scripts has really like it's just gotten so great. Like just so, you would think like on a show that's, you know, we're working on season 35 right now. So you would think that for a show that's been on TV for that long, like, they got to run out of ideas, but our writers still kind of managed to find angles on characters and stuff to tell new stories, which I think is amazing at this point.
It's such a part of every comedy writer's lives that I feel like you're just always, I know Christine Nangle who works on.
Oh yeah. The show. She's great.
And
yeah,
the care at which she takes her approach to the stories is that's what makes it so, you know, you can find those corners.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing, which may tap into what Alex just said, is or the question Alex asked earlier was that, like, I don't know, 5 years or so ago, they really made an effort to bring new blood into the writing staff, including like a lot more female writers, which is awesome. And they're all great. Like it's just amazing that like the writing staff is like so top notch. And especially the newer writers, they're all writing like amazing scripts and it's really fun. It's gotten fun again to work on. After being on the show for over 20 years. So, yeah.
I just wanted to quickly, while we're still talking about this, just say thank you. As someone who grew up and remembered when it first came on, the Tracy Ullman show, you know, like it helped me and my brother not hate each other because we were laughing at The Simpsons.
So oh, wow.
Just want to say thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad that I love it when people love the show. And thank you guys for Comic Book Club, because I was watching your show when you were doing it for, was it Revision 3 or something? I was watching it on TiVo.
Yeah, it was on TiVo. I kind of love that it was on TiVo. I miss TiVo, honestly.
That's how
I watched it. That's how I first discovered you guys, and I got very sad when it stopped being on TiVo, and then I discovered, oh, there's a podcast. So
yeah.
I reconnected with the show. So, yeah, thank you for doing this show for so long. And on a serious note, like, I think you guys really do a lot for the awareness of indie comics and just the comics community in general. So I think what you guys do is really important. So thank you.
We're trying.
It's so sweet. Yeah.
Thank you,
love
Matt.
All comics.
That is very kind of you to say. I just want to say, sort of to wrap this up, and similar to everybody else, Steamroller Man actually broke up my relationship with my brother.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
One family saved, one ruined. It's fine. It's even.
Yeah, equals out.
Before we wrap up here, though, so this is on Kickstarter until June 6th, so people can pledge it then. And you have, the first issue is done at this
point. It's all done. The second issue is actually all done, too. And I'm about halfway through the third issue. So,
what are you going to do with all this money, Matt? Huh? This is a scam. You're running the scammer? He got us.
Oh, man.
That's great. That's so cool. This book is super, super fun. Matt, congratulations on everything. Great seeing you. Great
Thanks.
Chatting.
I'm
with
so
you.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
Oh, man. It's so
funny. Funny, too. Like, and I don't know. This is, I know we're wrapping up, but like, you work in animation, the musical number. How bad do you want to see that anime.
Very badly. I really
you can tell
do.
It comes through the page.
People have really told, you know, when yeah. people find out I work on The Simpsons, they're like, "Oh, you should animate it." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, but I have a job doing animation 8 hours a day. It takes time.
Just do it the other 8 hours, that right? That adds up, yeah. I think.
Right.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's not a yep. problem. Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations. Have yeah. a great night.
Thank
so
you funny. Guys. This is literally a dream come true. So thank you for having me on the show.
You're the best.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt.
Take care of yourself.
Bye. You too.
All right. There we go. Once again, Matt Schofield. Good yeah. guy. Great comics. Steamroller Man. Check it out.
So funny.
Right in. It's great. You can check yeah. it out until June 6th on Kickstarter. Very good. And go pledge it. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And why don't we bring in our next guest? They are two Ooh. Of the guys behind Lester of Lesser Gods, which is coming out right now. It's already out from Dark Horse Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, Gideon Kendall and Eric Powell. Welcome. Yay! Hello.
Hey.
Great seeing you guys. Thank you for coming on. Gideon, this is multiple appearances for you, so appreciate you coming back.
Yeah, nice to be back. It's been too long.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, but excited to chat about this book. This book, very similar to the last one we're talking about, another comedy book with a wild, long history. I did that on purpose. I booked you guys at the same time because I knew this could happen. But Lester started as an animated short before it got turned into a comic book. Is that correct, Eric?
Yeah. It was Tim Miller who directed Deadpool. And David Fincher and Jeff Fowler, who directed Sonic movies, they were working on a animated anthology film and asked me to pitch a segment, which was the early version of Lester. That didn't happen. The film didn't happen, but Tim was kind enough to give me the rights back. And then nice. I ended up talking to Lucky Yates, the co-writer, who's an awesome comedian, and people might know him as the voice of Krieger from Archer.
Oh, nice.
We were talking about doing something together, maybe a comic or a pitch for a show or something. And we ended up putting together a pitch, and there was some interest from a network. And we developed the idea a little further. The show wasn't picked up. So we were like, let's not let all this work go to waste. Let's make a comic. And that's when we brought Gideon on board. Hmm.
And Gideon, why did you come on board, I guess? What sold you on the project?
Well, the chance to work with Eric was something that I didn't want to pass up. And it was so fucking funny. It was just, I read it, and like, usually when I read a script, even if it's my own, half the things in it, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to draw that for 100 pages, you know? But there was nothing like that in this book. Like, everything in it was like, oh yeah, I want to draw that. you know, maybe Lester's thong gets a little, gets, you know, I'm going to be ready to take a break from drawing his junk. But really, other than that, like, it's post-apocalyptic mayhem and there's just monsters. And, you know, Eric gives me really cool sketches of some of the characters, and then other ones he lets me run wild. And it's the most fun I've ever had drawing anything of my own or anyone else's. No offense to anyone else who I'm working with, but it's just super fun. So yeah, every day I'm drawing it, I'm like, I can't believe that this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. It's like the kind of stuff that I was drawing when I wasn't supposed to be drawing in high school. The whole book is like that.
Wait, Pete, sorry, just before you jump in, I just want to mention one thing real quick. So every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans, this is not a joke, named Brett Macris, a.k.a. Straight Bullet, a.k.a. Straight Bullies. He is actually friends from Lucky Yates back in the day, coincidentally.
Oh,
yeah. But he either creates or curates a cocktail for us every show, and this show, because he is friends with Lucky, he was inspired by this book. So he created the Apocalypse TikTok, which is bourbon and rye, chili liqueur, Patreon's bitters, hot sauce, and a large peel of orange. So there you go. There's the drink.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, sounds nice.
It is very good. Also, there's a great quote in the recipe where he talked to Lucky about it, and Lucky's response was put some weed in it for me. So that's
Lucky's not a drinker, but he does vibe.
Well, there you go.
One thing I was curious about that you just brought up is, you know, you give him some drawings and then some descriptions. How do you tell? Is it just something that lives in your head that you want to share? How do you choose?
If it's a main character, you know, something that's pivotal, I might give a little bit of direction. Or if something is very specific, like, you know, if a joke ties into something that has to be very visually specific, then I'll give a note. But Gideon doesn't really need it. he does just fine on his own.
Well, there's been a few places where your guidance has been very helpful. And, you know, I like it. It's like getting stuff from Eric is different from getting stuff from someone who doesn't also draw comics. It's like what makes the scripts really good too is the scripts make sense. You can I can immediately see how the page is going to look. It might take some time to figure out how to pack it all in there, but like it makes sense storytelling wise because he thinks that way already. And that also makes my job easier and more fun.
Yeah, I don't think I'm the best. I don't think I'm the best writer in the world, but I do think I have sympathy for fellow artists when it comes to scripts. You know, I'm not going to put something in there that's, going to give him too much of a heart attack to draw.
No, it's all super fun.
Real quick, because we haven't actually mentioned the concept of the book for anybody who's listening on the show. So it's the son of Odin, and he's traveling through a post-apocalyptic landscape. It's kind of, I don't know, it's like Mad Max meets something else, just like demons attacking the landscape. Mad Max with demons, maybe that's the best way of putting it.
It's about this loser, basically. He's living with his mother, and his mother's terrible, you know, verbally abusing him. He has no friends, he has no life, but he has, like the rest of us nerds, he has fantasy. He's a LARPer, he plays video games, he's very into Dungeons and Dragons. So basically the concept is, what would happen if a fantasy geek's every dream came true? You know, the apocalypse happens, Satan comes to claim the mortal world, and this guy finds out that he's the son of Odin and has to defeat Satan. to save the world from the apocalypse. And it only gets stupider from there.
There also seems to be, based on the first issue at least, a little bit of like riffing on He-Man kind of as well. Is that something you're playing with?
Yeah, it riffs on everything.
Okay.
It riffs on Clash of the Titans. It riffs on Conan, He-Man, Mad Max. Yeah, everything.
Gets a little bit more specifically He-Man very soon as well.
Yeah.
And just to not to talk about the publishing continuity more, but maybe I got this wrong. So you had a version of this or a previous issue of this that was published through Albatross. This continues this story, though, right? Yes. It's not just a pure reprint.
Yeah. So Albatross was my company, which I recently moved the whole shebang over to Dark Horse Comics as an imprint.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, we published a one shot. And then after the move to Dark Horse, we're doing this 3-issue mini that we'll collect with all the material.
Cool.
Could you go ahead, please.
Let me jump in. So we were talking with Matt earlier about sort of comedy, humor in comics, maybe coming, maybe having more of a renaissance now. It feels like it's coming back. Do you feel like, and this feels very much of that, what made you want to go with a hard comedy, sort of comedy first book?
I don't think there's really that much thought put into it. You know, like, it's like, oh, comedy's making a comeback? I'm not aware of this. You know what I'm saying? I'm not up on, you know, too much of what's actually taking place in the industry. I kind of just do projects that are, you know, that I'm passionate about. So this was, and comedy's kind of what I've done, you know, with The Goon and you know, some of the other things that I've done. I tend to either go really dark or funny.
I feel like The Goon did both. And this feels like it is less on the dark side.
This is, with the exception of the Satan Sodomy Baby one shots that I've done, this is the most vulgar I've gone with the humor. Mm-hmm. But it's not to that extent where it's like, you know, I don't want to use the word pornographic, but I can't think of anything to apply to it. But it's the adult. It's not that, it's fairly on the rated R side of humor, where most of my stuff has been kind of PG-13.
There's a lot of dangling penises, but they're always flaccid. So
yeah,
it doesn't cross
and
the
thank
line.
You for that way to keep the above the board. The beat.
We have morals.
Well, to that end, though, this is something that we were talking about when we were reviewing the first issue that I was impressed by. Is I think it would be very easy to just lean on the joke of you have this main character who is overweight in a thong, and be like, "Haha, isn't that funny?" But he's pretty relatively competent by the end of the issue. What was the thought process there?
Yeah, there's a certain nobility to him. Mm-hmm. You know, he takes what he's doing seriously. And there's something about that. There's a, you know, there's a heavy metal band called Manowar.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they take themselves very seriously. There's if you can look at them from the outside, and they're very much they're kind of, for me, they're the soundtrack of Lester. They take themselves very seriously, but they are in the kind of realm of, I don't know how to put it, kind of a D&D nerds really would, you know, really get into Manowar, that kind of thing. You know, it's all about the Valkyries are flying and everything, but there's something so great about not doing it tongue in cheek, like really meaning it, you know. And that's kind of the approach I take to that character, which he is, you know, he's a nerd, he's socially inept, but he actually is fairly likable in a weird way, and he does have an arc in this series. There is a place where his character is going, and I think it's actually kind of touching by the end of the last issue.
Nice.
Well, awesome. It's really nice that the world sort of bends around him, and he's just like, fuck yes.
Yeah, he's into it. Everyone else is like, oh my God, this is an apocalyptic wasteland and our life sucks now. He's like, fuck yeah, man.
He's confident.
Like, he's like, this world is awesome. I'm king here, you know? So he loves the apocalypse.
We got a comment here from Derek, says the art is like Richard Corbin drawing for Mad Magazine. Were those?
I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it.
That's a perfect description. That's a perfect description. It's so dead on.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Derek.
Well, and we got another question from Derek. Will Lester ever meet Gru?
I don't think Sergio is going to want to do a crossover.
Yeah. That's really funny.
Well, I could see it happening potentially. I think they're both Dark Horse, so it's fine. I did want to ask you, Eric, just not to take it away from here, but you also restarted the Goon at the same time, or at least we're seeing new Goon at the same time.
Yeah.
What is it like focusing on these two parts of your brain, or are they the same part?
Yeah, they're the same.
No, it's actually pretty different. Again, this is the Lester is a lot crazier, I think, than the Goon. And that's saying something. but I think that's Lucky's influence. Lucky swings for the fences. And I have to kind of rein him back in and go like, okay, this is what we can actually fit in the comic, you know. But he comes up with some pretty, crazy influences there, you know. And so Lucky kind of like formulates all this insanity, and then I kind of bring structure to it, and then we just hand it off to Gideon to, you know, work his magic on too. Mostly the dangling penises.
Yeah. Always
did you
more.
Like the penis pass first? Yeah. And then go through and drop it.
Yeah. Not enough penises. Only no.
We have a special continuity editor just for the genitalia. Right. Wow.
That's big money.
Too flaccid. Not flaccid enough.
We were kind of touching on this a little bit before, but it's almost like Lester and the Goon, at least the way that I see them, are almost opposite characters in terms of the Goon wants everybody to leave him alone, and he's constantly retreating from the action. And Lester, meanwhile, is moving in. He's like, nope, put me in more.
Yeah,
That's a good point. Yeah, the Goon would prefer to just sit in the corner and have a beer and everyone leave him alone. And Lester is like, verily, I will go and chop off your dong, you know.
Those are the two genders, I believe.
Right. Yeah.
And just to ask you, while we're talking about other projects, about another one, you got Dr. Worthless, the man who studied murder, coming up. I'm very excited about that.
Talking about a contrast here.
Yeah.
Lester and this graphic novel. Yeah.
Well, what can you tell us about that? Because what did Eddie Gein done? I always mispronounce that, and I apologize. Yeah. But was a really phenomenal, very serious piece of work, contrasting this other stuff we're talking about. It. What can we expect from the Frederick Wortham book?
Well, Harold, who co-wrote the Gein book with me, we were talking about projects to follow up this book with, and we came up with a couple of true crime cases and everything. And we're actually doing a signing in Portland, and we're crossing the street, and he just said, what about Frederick Wortham? And automatically, you know, the light bulb started going off, because this individual, you know, is also very notorious in the comic book industry, but he was also involved in a lot of high profile crime cases. That, you know, combination, just seemed like a perfect, you know, the perfect material to put into a graphic novel. And he's a very complicated guy, you know. It's hard to nail him down. And he's very vilified, you know, in comics, but also he was kind of critical to school desegregation. He gave testimony to that. So, yeah, there's a lot of things, a lot of research went into this. I'm spending, you know, it's at this point, I've been working on the book for about 2 years. So yeah, this is it's a very serious project. It's not along the lines of Lester at all. So yeah, it's that is really, you know, switching gears between the goon and Lester. Maybe that's not, you know, changing your mindset too much, but working on the Wortham book, it's that's definitely using a, you know, different side of your brain.
Still flaccid, I would imagine.
Still flaccid. Always. Wortham was always flaccid. That's the thing.
That's his old thing.
Always. That was his problem. No.
Yeah.
And last thing, and then I want to get back to talking about Lester, of course, more fully, but the Goon movie, this has been a very long development of this process at this point. I think the last we heard, at least publicly, at least we've heard, was 2022. There was going to be an animated movie at Netflix. Is there any update there? And why has this taken so long? I mean, I know things take
well,
a while.
I can tell you why this has taken so long, and I can tell you why 90% of the things that you hear about being developed don't happen. Because there's an executive, say, you know, executive at the company takes on the project, and you know, it's developing, it's coming along, and then executive leaves, either gets fired, goes to a different company, whatever. The new executive comes in and says, I'm not doing anything they're doing, they started, I'm gonna do my
doesn't
own
help me to do what they project. Did I need
right.
to do what I
and did. Then if you think about it, there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of politics that are going into it, where say they did continue doing one of the projects that the previous executive brought along and it's successful, then they're both going to be claiming, oh, that was me that, you know, brought this project. So that's happened to us a couple of times. We've had it set up at studios and, you know, we're right there. It's so close you can taste it.
Oh man!
And then, hey, I got a phone call. He just left to go join blah, 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 you know? And it's pretty heartbreaking, but at this point, you know, we've been trying to develop it for Jesus. I don't know how long it's been at this point. I guess it was around, God, I can't even remember. It's been decades at this point, decades.
Yeah,
wow.
Oh man.
Well, yeah. We're still trying. I just talked to him the other day, Tim Miller and everyone at Blur. So we're still trying. Tim is very adamant that we're eventually going to make it happen. And I have to remain, I don't know what the word would be, just kind of oblivious to it all. Otherwise, it would drive me insane.
Skeptically distant, cautiously optimistic.
Well, I'm glad you can mostly avoid it, other than when jerk podcasters bring it up on their podcasts.
Yeah, so. Sorry, no, not at all. Relive I mean, that. It's of course, it's it, everybody wants to know, you know, what's wrong with it.
I'm going to be first in line to see it when it comes out.
Thank you.
And particularly if it's on Netflix, there's no line.
Well, no,
I'll wake up. I'll set my alarm as soon as it's ready and start
he
watching.
Lines up. He pays a ticket to himself and he sits down. Well, I mean, it's
chintzy on the butter, though.
You cheap yourself on the butter.
it's really upsetting.
You gotta enjoy it. The fact that it's been going through this nightmare process in so many different ways feels like when there's juice, there's juice, and it'll get there. I feel like.
I hope so. I mean, had such a great response from all the tests that Blur did.
I mean, it's a shame. Property.
We really are the victims of bad timing, because when we brought the test out, it was kind of like animation. It was still too early for people to kind of accept a more adult animation. So we had to have that fight. And then, you know, again, it's just all bad timing, where as soon as we would, you know, get in the door and start working, someone would pull the rug out from under us. So we just have to, you know, everything has to line up. you know.
Well, just to get it back to Lester, then, since that started in animation and now you do have Gideon's Great Designs, have you guys talked about bringing that back at all? Like, bring that back as animated shorts?
We would love to. It would just take, you know, if there's some interest, that would be great. I think it would make an amazing TV show.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gideon, you just need to draw the stuff between the panels and you'll be good to go.
Oh yeah, no, I'm no good at in-betweening. That's I started working in animation, they very quickly realized that I was not going to be an in-betweener. I was terrible at it. So I went to backgrounds, and I've worked in backgrounds, you know, for like 20 years. So.
Oh wow.
Well, so as we mentioned, the first issue came out. The second issue is coming out on June 26th, I believe. What can we expect coming up in Lester issue 2 and 3?
More He-Man, it sounds like.
more schlongs, I guess, right?
Part of He-Man.
There's a very He-Man specific joke in there.
Oh, okay.
And you'll know it exactly when you see it.
Yeah. Well, I was saying in the review, like, I think this is such a funny, just great setup punchline joke comic. Like, and it's hard to find that. Like, right at the top of your narrator, like, there's just some great jokes in there.
Oh, yeah. So,
thanks.
Shouts to that. That's always. Yeah.
I think the most fun for me is writing the hokey dialogue.
Yeah.
It's just writing this, like I was talking about, the sincerity of it. It's like really sincere, but then, you know, just throwing in modern, you know, vulgarity and stuff into it. It's really fun just to write this, you know, kind of soliloquy and end it with, you know, and I'll shove it up your ass, you know, that kind of thing.
It's the juxtaposition of the apocalypse but it's also this very sort of dirtbag flyover country kind of world, and it's the back and forth of that, you know. You've got that whole thing, that whole combination is great, and both visually and in the writing, it's all there. So that's definitely a fun part of it.
Well, that makes me think Army of Darkness is a good comp for this to bring it to.
Yeah. I can see like that. Yeah.
It has that sort of suburban, like, let's wreck this shit.
Eric, we've talked about a bunch of your projects, but Gideon, before we let you guys go, is there anything else you want to plug, or is it all Lester all the time?
Well, at the moment it is mostly Lester, cause I've got to draw this third issue, which has some crazy stuff in it that I have to figure out how to draw it. But, I'm not sure what I'm able to say. Eric, you would probably know, but the book that I did with Albatross a couple of years ago with my friend Gabe Soria, Mega Ghost, there's things happening with that that I'm working on. Again, I'm not sure what is okay to say or what's not, but working on that. And it's funny. Like, you caught me at a time when I'm working on a whole bunch of different things, including Lester, but Lester's the only one I think I'm allowed to say anything about. But I'm having a good time. I'm drawing constantly, and I feel like, you know, definitely if I went back in time to 14-year-old me and said, hey, when you're 57, you're going to be frantically drawing comics as fast as you can and not sleeping, I would have been like, that sounds great. You know,
tell your younger self to practice thongs.
Come
in handy. And I know Done if you need done. Models, if you need models, we're here for you. We'll send.
Okay,
you.
Great. Absolutely. Hey, I might take you up on that.
Yeah, we can just stand up. Honestly, like, you haven't seen.
Yeah,
right. Well, I have no idea what's going on below those microphones.
That's the whole concept of the podcast. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations.
Yes, thank
on
you. It's thanks awesome. For your work.
Have a great night.
Good
thank
night,
you
guys.
So much, guys.
Love the book.
Take care.
All right. There we go. Once again,
legends
Eric,
today.
Powell,
oh my God.
Gideon Kendall talking about Lester of the Lesser Gods. The first issue is out now. You can check out the second issue from Dark Horse on June 26th.
Wow. And what a show.
What a show. It's not over yet, Pete.
We're in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Man.
We're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook, YouTube, X, Twitter, or Twitch, and we will get to them. In the meantime, anybody trying out that cocktail?
Yes, finished. Love.
Ooh, already chugged it, huh?
Excellent.
I just drank it at a sipping pace. More so when I had to move because of my internet. And now I'm drinking a Billy Goat Trail out of Seven Locks Brewing in Rockland, Maryland. Rockville, Maryland.
Oh, man.
Excellent. Pete, what about you?
I like Rockville, Maryland. You know what I mean? That's a different place.
Yeah, it's different.
You having a... Oh, go ahead.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Landshark.
When is the sponsorship coming through? Let's get this guy a case. God's sake. Distancy is alarming.
While we're waiting for questions to come in here, we should probably mention that this past weekend was Free Comic Book Day. And as we do every year on Free Comic Book Day,
we get together.
We got together in person and we hung out. It was actually, all honesty, a coincidence because Pete was in town for business. But it was very nice to see you guys hang out at St. Mark's Comics down in Brooklyn. Yeah. Something else happened that we should probably talk about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's also great. We get to hang out with your kids a little bit, which is always fun. And, you know, it's fun to see the different, because Zalbin just has like mini versions of himself. And then Justin's kids use him as a jungle gym, which I think is adorable. So it's fun to kind of see the different chaos that you guys live in. And I loved every second of it. It was a blast. And then, unfortunately,
it's fun to experience the chaos you live in, Pete, as well. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not above chaos.
Hold on. I think you're about to say this. Can I set this up, if that's okay?
Yes.
I know I wasn't there.
Yeah, that's weird that you're setting it up.
But there's somebody else who also lives in Brooklyn, and that is Nat Towson, frequent guest on the show, frequent heckler on the show as well.
Yeah.
And years ago, and correct me if I get any of these details wrong, Nat made a pronouncement. He said his company...
You're already fucking this up. You're already fucking this up. This is how this works, okay? People say ridiculous things all the time.
That's bad way of setting it up.
Nope. And, you know, one of the ridiculous...
Let's start with the beginning of the earth and work down from there.
Come on. People say crazy things all the time. And one of the crazy things that people say is, this is going to change everything forever. You know, this is a game changer. This is just so, you know, and Nat came on and was talking and there's nothing wrong with being passionate. But then he said, this is going to change everything. And I was just sick of it. So go ahead. You
hold on. What he actually said, just to clarify, is like, the world will never be the same after this. And
he
was teeing up. At the time, he worked for a company. This is like pre-AI.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic. And he was working at a company that ostensibly did like, ooh, we put 1,000 Harry Potter books into a text generator and here was came out. But they have a company and they were working on it. And he's talked about it here before on the show. What it eventually was he was creating, they were creating an album that way by feeding other albums in and creating the lyrics. And to his credit, we talked about this here on the show before, he said, after this is released, the world will never be the same. They released it and then the pandemic happened. So like technically he was correct.
Nope.
But you said you made a promise with him. You're like, if this doesn't change the world, I get to punch you in the stomach.
Next time I see you, I'm going to punch you in the stomach. Yeah.
And you haven't seen him, right? Because of the pandemic, because you moved out of state, etc. Until... this weekend, probably even bigger than the three of us getting together, Nat texted Justin and you guys got together. And I'll kick it over to you now that we do have visual aids. Let me know when you want me to bring them up.
We truly, the seconds after Alex left with our Free Comic Book Day meetup, Nat was like, oh, I'm in the area. We met up. Nat showed up. We had, and this is unplanned, we had some pleasantries. You know, we ordered beers, and Pete was like, I guess I need to punch you.
No, that's not how it. I said, are you ready to do this? And he looked at me like, what? And I was like, you got a punch coming. And he started laughing, and he was like, oh, yeah. And so I was like, yeah, I've been thinking about this for years. And so, yeah, he, I was surprised how into it he was. Cause,
me too. Cause
yeah.
And so I put together, I took some photos of the action and put together a slight progression.
Yeah.
In the comic
and book. I'm channeling, you know, the little, from Mike Tyson's Punch Out here, the little, little guy,
Little Mac.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, with the hood and everything. I like it. If you're listening to the podcast, we do have visual aids here. This is like stop motion, I would say, of what happened.
Yeah, I actually punched him. This is
So talk me through the slides. Let's do power. Nat loves PowerPoints. So
yeah, this is sort of like the cover of the comic, the punch number one, and it's Nat holding strong, not quite realizing perhaps that Pete's actually going to punch him.
Yeah.
And then Pete steps up and he swings. And boom, hits him, and actually hit him legit pretty hard. Like I heard it, and I was like 5 feet away. You could see on Nat's face that he's like, "Oh, I didn't think that was happening." And he literally, he moves back like a cartoon punch.
Yeah, like because
you see it.
Yeah, that's legit documentation of it. It's not overacting or anything. Like it's
like his body, like a Muppet. Like caved in around the punch as the punch continued to affect his body, and you see the progression there.
Also, notice the smile on my face as I'm punching him. Like,
yeah, Pete's very happy. Nat surprised, but of course, it ended with a hug. And Pete literally punched drunk from punching him. Look at the joy on Pete's face.
It was funny because I met people later and they were like, "You are beaming." And I was like, "I got to punch someone earlier today." And they were like, "Jesus, what?
You look like you won the lottery, the punch lottery." Yeah. And Nat's like, "I will kill this man someday."
This is great. Great choice of font as well, Justin, I have to say.
Look at this. Look at that compliment. Yeah, that's nice.
That's good. It's a good font.
Thank you.
There we go. It finally happened.
Also, I got to drive with the legend, which was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, man. So he was meeting someone. He was like, "I have to be on time." I was like, "Well, because of all that punch and stuff, we're going to be 15 minutes late." Pete's like, "Oh, man." I was like, "Don't worry, buddy. You're riding with the king."
The king.
We cut through Brooklyn. I'm cutting in and out. BQE. Off the BQE. Get him to Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And we weren't on time, but we were only 2 minutes late. And that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. He was like one of those taxi drivers where you're like, "Oh, shit, where's the seatbelt?" Like, he was just kind of, boom, sticking and moving, bobbing and weaving.
And you had two kids in the back as well.
Yeah, yeah, two kids that he was like feeding baby carrots.
Be right back. Got to break.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, he was doing it all, man.
That's amazing. We should mention, before we get and we have a couple of questions here now.
Grand Theft Justin shout.
Yes, Grand Theft Justin. Very good. There's one more thing we should mention. When we got together, Pete told us about something, and I cannot believe this. Pete told us that he has, for real, another secret quiz that he set up. And I do think, like, it's progression that he told us about it this time. That's nice, but...
And let's remember, just to say... Pete had a secret Punisher quiz for 5 full years during our live show that he never told us about what was existing. And then one day, one of the funniest episodes of the podcast we've ever done, he revealed that he's had this going for 5 years. And Alex and I were agog. I've never been more in shock in my life.
So he does have another secret quiz that secret quiz led to us feeling obligated to have secret quizzes as well. I felt like the three of us did it and we wrapped it up and we're good. So I got to say, Pete, I am not behind you on this one, but
oh wow,
you do have,
I don't have your support. I don't have your support is what you're saying.
I'm not behind you.
Wow. Look at that.
Wow. So
Zalbin, always the first to jump ship. For everybody out there, if you're ever somewhere, no, Zalbin's the first guy who's going to turn his back on you.
I'm the Billy Zane of the podcast, man. Yeah. Can't help
it. He's Pete Best. He's out of here.
Yeah. So there you go. That's what's happening. Let's get to a couple of questions here. This is from Pablo. What do you guys think of the Megalopolis teaser yet? Have you guys seen it? This is the new Ridley Scott movie, right? That apparently is unmarketable.
No, not Ridley Scott. Coppola. Right?
Coppola, yes, Coppola.
It's Coppola, and it's the movie that he's been working on for decades. I believe mostly self-funded, finished. He's been screening it for like studio heads and doing like invited screenings. The reactions are, this is insane. This is a passion project. He spent like over $100 million on it.
Well, one of the things that I'll mention that came out about it is that part of it is in the middle of the movie, a live actor needs to come out of the theater and interact with the screen. And when he screened it for executives, they had Adam Driver come out and everybody's like, how are you, who are you expecting to do this in movie theaters? How is this going to happen? How is this going to work?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
And so like getting distribution is going to be difficult, but it may be, I think the goal is to make it like this once in a lifetime movie theatrical experience.
Yeah. So I have not seen the teaser, but everything I hear about it sounds absolutely wild. And I don't know, more big, insane swings that probably go wrong. Why not?
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
And he's a master. Like, if he's going to do a weird thing, we should watch it. Like, if you've watched any of his movies or drank any of his wine, like, go watch this movie and be excited about it.
Derek wants to know TMNT secret quiz.
Nope.
Okay, but a follow-up question. The stack understandably covers a lot of first issues and event comics. Do you have trouble finishing limited series, or do you read comics that aren't in the stack?
Great question.
I don't think we have trouble finishing limited series. I think, frankly, if there's a limited series, I've talked about this before, but I think we read a first issue to give it a shot. If we're mixed or positive about it, or it seems like a big deal, we'll probably check out a second issue. If we're still mixed about it or not saying anything necessarily new, I probably won't throw the third issue in the stack. But if it's a limited series, if it's four issues, I'm much more likely to be like, let's give it a chance and see what happens.
Yeah, let's finish it up.
Yeah, just finish it up strong. So I think if anything, limited series, we probably finish more frequently than ongoing series.
Well, definitely. It's hard to finish an ongoing series.
Yeah. We're almost done with Batman. Like, we're this close.
The comic book club is wrapping up Batman. Wow. Great. And do we read comics that aren't in the stack? Yes. But it's harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. I read a couple of Free Comic Book Day books we're probably not going to talk about. I don't know if that
counts. Yeah, samesies.
Samesies.
Well,
I will say it's a different. We've been spoiled having gone to Midtown Comics for a Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, man.
We did not, where you got all the books. This year, we went to St. Mark's and it was like, would you like all ages or action adventure? And so I got one book and then two more for my kids. So I ended up with Hellboy as my main pull.
That's smart, having kids. That way you get more comics on Free Comic Book Day. I see
the main reason.
Do it. Yeah, that's
the main reason a lot of people have kids.
And the thing about it that we've definitely talked about before, but the comic book shops pay for them. Like, they're free for customers, but it still costs the shop money. So totally makes sense when a shop only does one book. I will say, with my kids, afterwards we went to Midtown Comics, and they were even given a shorter stack. They were given like 6 books instead of their regular 20. And then we went to Galaxy Comics in Brooklyn, where we met up with Nat. And
wow, you were just hitting them all, huh? Like, it's like Halloween out there.
My kids really wanted to punch Nat in the stomach, so we met him there. Did that.
Nat got his ass kicked all day.
Yeah.
It's free kicking Nat's ass day, really.
But I will say, I really like what Galaxy did. They gave everybody 5 comics, but your choice. Like, they had them all set up on the
Oh,
mats.
That's what I wanted. I want to choose, man.
That's cool. That's good.
I want the answer, you know, like some kind of tripped question.
See, you
like,
got handed a TMNT Free Comic Book Day comic.
Yeah, like, I lucked out, though. What if I would have said all ages? What would I have gotten?
I don't know.
Well, don't. Why would you say all ages?
I don't know, man. You could panic sometimes. You're not expecting a quiz.
I'll take the old age comic. Are you going to ID?
Oh!
How's this happening?
All right. Well, that is it for audience questions. We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
LePage.
This is the part we give back to you. It's the lovely audience, it's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you'd want some comic books. So all we need is a first hand up or a pick me or a hey, make Justin do it and we'll donate to a charity, you know, something.
Make Justin do it? Already. I don't know. I did it.
Wow. No hands up. Nobody wants free comics. Everybody's all free comic'd out.
Yeah, they're like, I have so much money in comics that
I'm so rich. This is actually really interesting. It comes from the Patreon.
Easy readers. And what were you going to say, though?
I was going to make a joke about most of our listeners being millionaires, but don't worry about it.
Oh,
it wasn't good. It wasn't a good joke.
We have famous chefs that are listeners. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. We do.
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on comic book artists.
Well, and we should say Easy Reader is going to be doing
it. Yeah, I said that already.
Did you?
Easy Reader.
There, now all three of us
are doing trivia.
Now, does that feel better? Can we?
Does.
Today's trivia is on comic book artists and a small nod to the legend, Louis Gossett Jr., RIP Chappie. Here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. This glorious comic book artist was born in Canada, raised in SoCal, worked at DC, Marvel, and has his own creator-owned series called Steampunk. Who is it? Is it A, Chris Bocciolo, B, I Want to Talk to Samson, or C, Will Sampson?
While we're waiting for the answer, I have a quick question. So Louis Gossett Jr. Died on
both
March
of us. Wait, real quick, Alex. Sorry to interrupt you. Your interruption, but literally, as soon as you said Louis Gossett Jr., both Alex and I are feverishly typing into our devices to find this out. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah, it is correct.
Yeah, he died on March 29th. How much of a backlog do you have at this point?
It's so big. Yeah, I was surprised. I had to go through my files. I was like, I can't believe I haven't done this already.
My files. You're shuffling. You're like an SNL writer's room.
Don't tell me what I am. Don't tell me what I am. All right, here we go. Question number two. This comic book artist is said to be the king of San Diego. Is it A, Jim Lee, B, Yes, Cuban B, or C, Ian Abercrombie?
This is a trivia question that literally only very few people could answer.
A
is correct. All right, here we go. Question number three. This comic book artist is known for her highly detailed painted style. Is it A, Joe Chen, B, the Squirrel Master, or C, Chuck Norris?
I'm going to guess Easy Reader will get this one just based on the pattern that Justin called before he even went.
Yeah, A is correct.
Wow, congratulations, Easy Reader. You're getting a gift card.
Am I a precog, you think?
I guess so.
You are in that milk bath.
A lot.
Easy Reader, shoot us an email. We're going to get you a gift card to Midtown Comics. What movie were you paying tribute to, Pete?
Well, of course, I was talking about the 1986 adventure film Firewalker. I used to watch that a lot.
Oh, Pete, do you think someday you'll go out and kill someone just so you can get them into trivia?
That's a great plot for a movie. Yeah. Ooh. Guy runs out
you think
of
that's a great
people.
Plot for a movie? It would take the entire first act to explain what the fuck this is.
Answer, death. I don't know.
Yeah,
the answer is death. Yeah.
So, of course, all the B answers were, nods to Half-Baked.
Sure. As we all know, new comic books are coming out this week, and we love comic books. What are you looking forward to, Pete?
Oh, man, there's a lot of great stuff. I'm an Image head, apparently, today, so The One Hand, number 4, The Last Mermaid, number 3, and The Sacrificers, number 8. All bangers this week. I can't wait to get into it in the stack.
Good choices. Justin, what about you?
You know I got a shout out, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees.
Oh, dude.
By Patrick Horvath.
Oh, my God.
My favorite movie of the past year or so. Really enjoying that. Also want to shout out there's a lot of stuff happening in Blood Hunt that is pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the hunt.
I'm excited to get into this sort of the first week of expanded looks at what Blood Hunt means. But I got to also say the Sacrificers number 8 by Rick Remender.
Come on, bro.
Remender,
dude,
just doesn't.
Last panel, dude. Come on,
doesn't
bro.
Doesn't miss.
And dude, come on, bro.
You know the way he's going to move, but it still is great and surprising. And this issue, it looks like it's going to be a real page turner, corner turn for the character. For Newman.
Big time.
You guys mentioned most of the stuff that I mentioned, but to throw out two other ones, Crocodile Black, number 1 from Boom Studios,
yeah.
Philip Kennedy Johnson, always interested in whatever he is doing. And I'm also really interested in The Boy Wonder, number 1 from DC Comics by Judy Ba. That's out today. That's a black label book about Damian Wayne.
Is.
I like Damian Wayne. There you go. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Eric Powell and Gideon Kendall for coming on.
Yes.
Talking about Dark Horse Comics, Lester Legends. Of the Lesser Gods. Check out issue 1 in stores everywhere right now. Also, Matthew Schofield for talking about Steamroller Man. Check that out on Kickstarter until June 6th. It's great. Very fun. Next week, we're going to have another great show for you all. Asia Simone, the artist from Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur Wreck and Roll, is going to be here.
Cool.
And also Steve Orlando is going to be back on the show Matthew Medney to talk about Gungnir and a whole expanded new line of comics. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast. Check that out Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast talking about X-Men 97. I did forget to mention the Stack podcast is Wednesdays at 9 a.m. The Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed, so check out all of those titles that we mentioned there. Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, good night.
Good night, folks. Boop. So grab your window.